the second hour of It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. It's time for this week's in-depth interview with a special guest from the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copeland.
Welcome back if you were with us in the first hour, and if you just joined us, I wanted to let you know this is a two-hour show in which we balance the creative with the intellectual and explore whether we have more in common than divides us. And we do this by featuring thought-provoking conversations out and about with people on the street in the first hour on a different topic each week. And then in the second hour, I talk to an inspiring special guest from the arts. And if you want more information on the show, you can go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. You can hear all past shows there as podcasts. We've had some great topics and some wonderful guests. So that's itsaquestionofbalance.com. Well, this week, as my special guest from the arts, I'm pleased to be interviewing Bobby Roth, award-winning film director. Over his long career, Bobby has directed more than 80 episodes of television, 25 TV movies, and 13 feature films. For his entire career, he has alternated between commercial television and independent filmmaking. Bobby's independent films have been exhibited in over 100 film festivals worldwide, and five of his films have premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, where he has also been a judge. In the early 80s, Bobby had an overall deal to write, produce and direct for Universal, where he created the series The Insiders for ABC. His work in commercial TV also includes directing episodes for such TV favourites as Revenge, Hawaii Five-O, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Grey's Anatomy, The Mentalist, Lost, Prison Break, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman and Beverly Hills 90210, to mention just a few. Bobby was born and raised in Los Angeles. He studied philosophy and creative writing at UC Berkeley before graduating with a BA in cinema from USC in 1972. He went on to film school at UCLA, where he received his MFA in motion picture production. Bobby was a founding member of the Independent Feature Project, which champions the future of storytelling by connecting artists with essential resources, and during its 35-year history has supported over 8,000 projects and offered resources to more than 20,000 filmmakers. Bobby was also the first co-chairman of the Directors Guild of America's Independent Feature Committee. Using his decades of directing experience, Bobby has recently created A Director Prepares, Bobby Roth's Masterclass, which is an essential teaching and research tools for students in film and television production, drama, acting and performance studies, and film theory and media studies. This 10-part series is also a fascinating documentary for anyone interested in film and entertainment generally, or collaborative creative practice. A Director Prepares takes viewers on a journey through every stage of film production from the unprecedented perspective of one of the working director's collaborations with over 50 industry professionals, all of whom have worked with Bobby on at least one project. Welcome to the show, Bobby.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm wondering, obviously you've worked in the arts for all your career, but I'm wondering if you can remember your first experience with any art form that really gave you a sense of the power of the arts to affect us on a deeper level rather than it just being entertainment.
That's tough. It's tough to know. I mean, I never thought I would be an artist. My dad was a businessman when I was very young and I first started drawing. He told me art was for girls, and I quickly put that away for what turned out to be another 10 years. And I think something happened to me during the anti-war movement in the early 70s when I went to Berkeley. I was kind of just swept along and started writing poetry. It was pretty bad poetry, but it occurred to me that maybe I didn't have to be in the floor covering business like my dad. Maybe I could do something else. And I just began writing. And I was very lucky. At Berkeley, I got into a seminar with only seven students studying under a great American playwright, Lillian Hellman. And I think, you know, life just seems to be a series of, looking back, they're not as coincidental as they seem, but that inspired me to try to be a writer. And then when I got tired of being alone all the time, I thought maybe I could get into cinema. So I went to film school at USC, thinking that maybe the creative could, you know, be a more social activity. And that just seemed to stick for me. I felt I had a knack for what turned out to be editing.
Right. Yeah. I'm always interested when I talk to my guests about their kind of environment growing up, whether they did grow up in a creative environment or not. Some people did and some people not at all. So it sounds like you would say you probably didn't when you were young.
I fall into the not at all group. My parents weren't intellectual in any way. My dad was a business guy. My mom barely got through high school, but they were a Jewish couple who believed in education for their kids. So they wanted me to get a good education.
Right. So you're a great advert for education because it's taken you to places you would never have got to otherwise.
Yeah, but I wasn't a good student really until I got into college. I think emotionally I got intimidated when I was in school, and only when I got into college, and then that was kind of a fluke. I went to what's now Cal State Northridge initially on a golf scholarship, and thought that I, you know, was going to be a business guy and I was going to play golf. Everything changed. Everything changed in the late 60s, early 70s with anti-war movement and the peace love kind of hippie movement that I quickly responded to.
Yeah, you mentioned that you moved from, I think you were originally studying philosophy and creative writing, and you said you didn't want to be so alone, and so you went into studying cinema and then an MFA in motion picture production. I'm intrigued to know what you study to get a motion picture production degree and how it equips you for the business, and also maybe how it doesn't or maybe can't.
Well, you know, it was twofold, because half of my time in film school I was in critical studies, which just really entailed watching a lot of movies and writing about them, and I love that.
Yeah.
And it was a very exciting time because I was at UCLA in grad school, and they had a wonderful link to third world countries in terms of the Senegalese cinema, the Latin American cinema, Asian cinema. And so I was very lucky that I was seeing movies from all over the place and then getting to meet the filmmakers. And it was a diverse film school. So before I did my master's thesis, I went off to Africa, to Ethiopia, to work on another student's project, and just had this kind of life-changing moment where they happened to oust Haile Selassie, who had been in power for 50 years. I was there making a movie.
Wow.
And we got arrested, we got out, but things that wouldn't normally happen to a young Jewish boy, you know, in Los Angeles, really opened me up to politics and social change.
Yeah, wow, what an experience. I wanted to ask you, you studied film production. What made you want to be a director rather than a film producer?
Well, first of all, none of us wanted to or cared much about money.
Right.
It was just a lot of the time. I mean, it was almost considered bad form to even be middle class at that time. So
right.
I really thought that I would be a documentary filmmaker and maybe work on union organizing films. Or I didn't ever think that I would be in Hollywood. We kind of had disdain for Hollywood. And I, in fact, managed to stay away from television for the first 10 years after I got out of school. So what I thought I would be doing was just trying to, you know, change the world through film.
Right. Yeah. You're a Los Angeles native, and you mentioned how, you know, seeing films from all around the world was very inspiring. I'm wondering how much influence the close proximity of Hollywood had on your decision to go into film.
It might have been more than I thought. I really, my mom loved movies. She loved people in the film business, but they really didn't know a lot of people. But the couple of people they knew seemed to have a big impact on me. They were friends with a couple named Helen and Lou Town, whose son Robert Town was this wonderful screenwriter who wrote, among other things, Chinatown, the final drafts of Godfather, Shampoo, Last Detective. He was a great writer. Wow. And I didn't know him well, but I knew that he made a living in the film business, and he came to see my first movie out of film school, and it's very positive to me.
I was wondering
and
how...
I was just going to say along the way that I would bump into people seemingly by accident who were very inspiring. Bob Town was one of them. Lindsay Anderson was one of them. Tomas Gutierrez Alea from Cuba happened to be in Los Angeles and came to see my master's thesis and inspired me. And probably more than anyone, Costa Gavras, the French-Greek filmmaker who had done Z, took a positive look at my first movie and was very supportive, you know, and I think those people telling me that I had something and that I should continue was really important.
Yeah. So perhaps more than just the sort of physical presence of the industry there, it was more to do with the fact that it's a magnet for very creative people from all over who come there to because the film industry is there and you got exposed to that.
Yeah, I think so, and it was a time also when, you know, the industry was changing too. I mean, the technology changed in the 70s. I mean, it was probably the best time for story films, you know.
Yeah.
The films like that Hal Ashby or Sidney Pollack or Sidney Lumet were making were, they were more socially conscious. There was like Coming Home, there was Five Easy Pieces, there was Midnight Cowboy. So you thought maybe I could find a place for myself in this business.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you just joined us, I'm speaking to my special guest from the arts this week, award-winning film director Bobby Roth. We're going to go to some messages now. We'll be back after this.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com. It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz.
We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 48 years. We are a one-stop shop for all your holiday needs, including books, gifts, children's books, toys, holiday cards, puzzles, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right gift for everyone on your list. If you want something special, we feature mini autograph books by best-selling authors at no extra charge. If you can't get downtown, our website has 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin, and my special guest from the arts this week, award-winning film director Bobby Roth. So before the break, Bobby, we were talking about, you know, how you first started studying film. I was wondering, how did you get your first directing job?
You know, I didn't really get jobs. I was very entrepreneurial. Maybe I got that from my dad, where I would write a script, and then I would go out and I would try to raise money to make the movie, and then I would try to find somebody to distribute the movie. And I did that several times before anybody hired me.
Right.
But the first time I got hired, it was by the actor Anthony Quinn.
Oh, yeah.
Who was producing a movie, and he had seen my little movie, The Boss's Son, which was my first of my many autobiographical movies. And he had liked it and hired me to direct a book that he had.
Hmm.
It was a very unsettling experience.
Oh, really? Why?
He was a very tough guy to work for. And I think, you know, he was a wonderful actor. He had not produced really before. He was just a very tough guy, and he was tough on me, and I found that I was tough on him.
Mm.
So it was a struggle throughout. And the movie was kind of a strange movie. It was about a corporation that brainwashed its executives.
Yeah.
And it was a movie that made people very uncomfortable, and at the time, I thought that was a good thing. I've now come to believe that you don't want to make people uncomfortable when they go to the movies.
I'm sure there's not everyone who still agrees with you, because there's plenty of films that still do that. But yes, I think life-affirming is what I prefer when I go to the cinema.
Yeah, me too.
But that's also interesting, that tale, to show how the tone of one person can kind of trigger, you know, a domino effect of the tone, perhaps on a set. You know, you said he was very hard on you, and then you were hard on him, and, you know, that perhaps could have trickled down even to other people in the crew and things like that.
Though that's really not the way I operate. I try, I mean, one of the things I feel very committed to is kindness and respect for my crew and my cast. And I really think it's the same way I believe you should parent your children, is that nobody works better when they're being yelled at. Nobody works better when they're being rushed or pressured. I just haven't seen it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was meaning. He kind of set the tone that then triggered, you know, how things went down. And so it's so important, you know, the person who is the leader or is at the top sets a good tone, I would imagine.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. As I mentioned in the intro, you've directed more than 80 episodes of television, 25 TV movies, 13 feature films. Film directing is something we're all familiar with conceptually. You know, we see the Best Director Awards and Director's Cut on DVDs, things like that. But I'm thinking that most of us probably don't know exactly everything that direction encompasses. I was wondering if you could break down for us what a director does on a project?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, because I find that even many showrunners and producers don't really know what the directing job entails. And I look at it as a designer of the film.
Mm.
And somebody who, it's almost like a conductor or a maestro in an orchestra, where you take all the disparate parts, the actors, the screenplay, the costume and costume designers, and you know, every piece, the sets, all the locations, whatever, and you basically have to integrate everything and make it mesh together as a whole.
Mm.
And that's the biggest challenge for me, is trying to see the whole while you're, you know, going about your job, because we work in such little pieces. We shoot one scene at a time and we shoot out of order, that it's very important to be able to conceptualize the whole thing. And I think only the director can do that.
Mm. It seems to me that you need both left brain and right brain capabilities as a director, because there's the organizing and planning the technical side, and then there's also working creatively with the actors and crew. Is that right, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the main thing I try to teach my students is that production issues become creative issues, because everything we do is tied to time and money. And if you squander your time, you will squander your opportunities to do the best you can creatively. So you have to do everything you can to prepare and to be ready.
Right, yeah. So the director is in charge of telling everybody, like, the shots, and telling everybody, you know, technically what they're going to do and how the film is going to look. But then he or she is also working with the actors like a theater director, are they, as well, with like performance and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the main tenet of my teaching, is that everything that you can do ahead of time on your own, what I call homework, is designing, so that you write your shots, that you plan out your staging, that you have literally dozens of meetings with everybody, from stunts to visual effects to props to special effects, to whatever, and you do all of that ahead of time, and you try to communicate that to your team so that you can be present for your actors on set. When you're on set, you want to really be as calm as you can be and as focused on performance as you can be, and the only way you can do that is by getting the other stuff, the camera, the lights, the stunts, all the things that you can do ahead of time. You can organize those and let other people carry them out for you while you're there with the actors.
Mm. And I guess it probably differs from director to director how much influence they want to have on how a scene goes and how much they leave it to the actors.
Well, and yeah, and in this day and age, the hardest thing for me is the coordination with the showrunner, because there is usually a person or persons in an office somewhere, men or women, who have been responsible for the screenplay, and they've been responsible for hiring everybody, and they look at it as their show, and I understand that. But when you're a director, the way I've been trained is that you look at it as your show.
Right.
So yeah. The important thing now, especially in TV, is how do you please the people whose show it is, the showrunners, and please yourself at the same time, and how do you, you know, maintain your own creative, you know, stamp while doing work essentially for other people?
Yes, yeah. I was going to ask you, because you've worked in TV and film, what the differences might be in directing these two different visual art forms. Is that the main difference, would you say? That
I think that's the main difference. I mean, I know if you're doing a big studio movie for Marvel, that it's very similar in the sense that you're working for them. But in all my independent films, you know, especially in the last several that I've made, like Berkeley and Manhood and Jack the Dog, is that I was both the writer, the director, and the producer.
Mm.
And I didn't have to answer to anybody else. Whereas when I do, I've just done three shows back to back, Player, Scorpion, and Hawaii 5-0, I'm very much answering to the showrunner.
Mm.
And so I try to, as much as I can, get it inside the head of the showrunner and see what he or she may want, and then try to give it to them in a way that pleases me creatively.
Right. Yeah, that sounds like that would be quite an art, I imagine.
Yeah, well, I'm learning.
So with TV series, different directors work on different episodes. How do you prepare to work on a show episode when you're not in control of the whole project, like the whole series, you know, like you are with a feature film?
I think the first thing that's most important is to be as familiar with what's gone down before you. Mm. I came to Lost in the third year of the show, and the first thing I did was watch all 55 episodes that preceded Lost.
Wow.
And because I had to know what they had done before, both story-wise and also to see the rhythm of the show, to see how it's cut, to see how it's shot, to know as much as I could about how the actors work, and also just how it's photographed. And so you can learn a great deal if a show is in its third year or beyond. If you're in a show like in terms of Scorpion, I literally did the second episode after the pilot, so there was not a lot to look at.
Mm.
So I had to, in some ways, that's more exciting because you have to create it. You have to, you know, show them what's possible. You know, and I've been able to do that with a number of shows that I've come on early.
Yeah,
and that's fun when it works.
Yeah, I'm wondering why they use different directors on different episodes. Why don't they like hire a director to do the whole series?
Well, you know, it's technically impossible because we're prepping one while we're shooting one while we're cutting one.
Oh, interesting.
So really, at least three of us, and often four of us, are working simultaneously in different facets of production and post-production.
Uh-huh.
So some shows have used more and some have less. Like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the first 13 episodes were done by 13 different directors.
Gosh.
And then what they did is they found out the ones that they thought best realized the vision of the showrunners. And then when they got picked up for the next 9 episodes, they asked some of us to come back, and I was lucky that I came back into 2 of the next 9 and continued on into the third and fourth years of the show. I mean, the second and third years of the show. But, you know, usually a show will ultimately find a number of people. Like Prison Break, I ended up doing, I think I did the most episodes of anyone. But even then, it was only 14 out of 80.
Right, yeah.
So it's just not possible to, some shows, if they're unusually designed, like now, you know, people aren't following the model of 22 or 24 episodes in a year. You get a series like True Detective for HBO that in the first year they only did, I think, 8 of them, and they were all directed by the same guy.
Right.
And but in order to do that, you have to have a much longer schedule, you have to make fewer episodes, and you have to have all your scripts ready ahead of time.
Yeah.
And whereas with a lot of network shows, we don't get the script until the first day of pre-production, and sometimes my first episode of Lost, I had to prep the whole show without a script, with just an outline.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, that's a challenge.
Yeah. I know in your masterclass project, A Director Prepares, you mention that, you know, you've said already that you need to be really well prepared. And I was interested in the, you mentioned Prison Break, the situation in Prison Break where you had this incredibly complex action scene with helicopters on the roof and everything, and then it rained in the morning. It seems like that would be a nightmare if you weren't of a certain disposition that could really put you over the edge.
Well, and that was an example I use of, you know, preparation really saving you, because we thought we would have 13 hours to shoot a sequence that we ended up only having 9 hours for, and because we were so prepared, we were able to pull it off. Because, you know, among the things that you prepare for are all the eventualities of things going wrong, because things always go wrong.
Yeah, Yeah. I know you mentioned all things like, you know, the weather, you know, things breaking, talent, oversleeping, all these issues.
It's and it's always something that you didn't anticipate.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's never the thing you worried about. It's something entirely new. You know, a prop not working that is the center of a scene, or I can't even begin to think what can go wrong, but you just have to have contingency plans.
Right, yeah. Your masterclass project, a director prepares, is a fascinating documentary about the mechanics of film, as well as a valuable teaching tool for those entering the film industry. What inspired you to create the series?
I had been teaching for years, and I had kind of come up with a masterclass that I traveled around. I went to Australia, I went to Turkey, I went to all through Canada with it, and I enjoyed it, but I thought, not only did I want to put it down as a document with a film, but I thought it could be better if I could contain not just clips of the shows, but also footage of me actually directing, because the things that my students seemed to benefit a lot from were hearing the relationship, hearing and seeing the relationship I have with the people I work with, and also literally being on a set. So I tried to bring those two elements into the class, and I didn't have any idea. I thought maybe I'd interview a couple people that I'd worked with, and everybody kept saying yes. And before I knew it, I interviewed 57, you know, collaborators of mine. Half of them were actors. Many of the stars of literally the seven shows that I had done the most, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Prison Break, Lost, all those stars came out to support me and let me interview them about how we worked together. And then I also got the showrunners of many shows and cinematographers and editors and writers of many shows. And I thought we could put together a whole portrait of what we do.
Yeah.
I think it works.
Yeah. Well, it's also an endorsement of your work, I would say, that so many people were willing to talk to you. You know, they're not like, oh, God, not him, you know, but they're like, they're like coming forward and really lauding your skills, which must feel good after all these years.
Yeah, I didn't really approach them.
Bit of selective editing there of who you got in the film.
Absolutely.
Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copeland, and my special guest from the Arts Award-winning film director, Bobby Roth. We're going to some messages now. We'll be back after the break.
Imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made desserts in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Danielle and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, award-winning film director Bobby Roth. And I wanted to let you know, if you wanted to find out more information about Bobby, you can go to the website bobbyroth.net, and that's spelt just like it sounds, BOBBYROTH.net. And before the break, we were talking about your masterclass project, A Director Prepares, Bobby, and you mentioned you interviewed, I think, 57 professionals for the project. And how did you approach these interviews? What were you hoping to glean from each person?
I had never made a documentary, even though I thought that's what I was going to do when I went to film school. I somehow managed to go 40 years without making one. And so I went into it the way I'd gone into filmmaking in general, a little bit naive and very brash. and I just, with every interview, I would call the guy or the woman up, and I would ask them if they would come over. Most of them came to my house. A few of them I came to them. And I wrote very specific questions based on my relationship with them, my working relationship and friendship with them. And I recorded over 8 hours of interviews, and I wasn't really sure how it was all going to fit together. And then I'm very lucky that I have a son who I work with who is way more organized than me and probably a lot smarter than me. And I kind of dumped all 75, 80 hours on him. Huh. And I first cut it down to about 15 hours just by pulling out the things I didn't think that were useful.
Right.
In telling the story that I wanted to tell. And then I let my son at it, and he spent literally months kind of trying to make sense of how the interviews would fit with one another and would interlace with my teaching.
Yes.
And so I had already photographed myself giving the master class as just a professor, but it had to work in conjunction with the interviews. And the interviews had to support the ideas that I was saying in my class.
Mm.
And my son just did, I think, a wonderful job putting it all together. And we worked with two or three other editors as well. And it just seemed to take shape over the year plus that we spent cutting it. And it was really gratifying to do it because I learned a lot.
Mm. Interesting. And you've personally worked with all the film professionals who feature in A Director Prepares. Was that an important prerequisite for you, that you'd work with them?
Yes, that was really the main conceit of the project, that I would not interview anyone I hadn't worked with and spent time on a show with. And many of them, you know, I like to work with people over and over, so I've done, you know, more than 10 projects with Peter Coyote. I've done both independent features and mainstream television with Esther Carbonell. And some people like Peter Weller I worked with literally 20 years ago or 25 years ago. And then other people like the people from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Chloe Bennett, who herself is only 22 years old. I mean, I wanted to get a real cross-section of the people I had worked with.
Mm.
So everybody could speak to specific projects, and then we try to intercut the interviews with clips from the show. So for me, the real star of the series was the shows themselves. You know, they were, that's where I found that people all over the world watch Lost. China is enormously fond of Prison Break. Revenge is very big in Australia. I mean, so we just went to the people that I'd made those shows with, the showrunners, the stars, some of the writers, many of the five of the cinematographers I'd worked with on these shows, and we just were able to talk very specifically about how we worked together.
As I mentioned earlier, there's sort of two audiences for A Director Prepares. One is more people who are just interested in film, who just watch it as a documentary on film. And then there's also the aspect of it being a valuable teaching tool for people entering all aspects of the film industry. I'm wondering what you would hope would be the takeaway for each of those different audience groups.
Yeah, I think it started out primarily as a teaching tool and really aimed at aspiring filmmakers or even more veteran filmmakers. But what we found is it turned out to be pretty entertaining for everybody. So I tried to, and my son was very good at this because I couldn't be objective about my own work, at pulling the things, you know, it's very anecdotal at times. And he was very good at pulling out the personal stories I would tell that resonated for other people, because I talk about everything from my mother's drinking to Howard Koch, the head of Paramount, telling me I had no talent, to Costa Gavras finding me in a cheap little hotel in Cannes and pulling me out and believing in me and sitting alone and watching my master's thesis. So, I mean, the stories resonate for people, and then the personality of, you know, the good thing is 25 of my interviews, or I think 27 of my interviews, are with people who entertain people on camera for a living.
Right,
so
yeah.
You ask Henry Winkler a question, you don't just get an answer, you get a show.
Right, yes, yeah.
And the same with Eddie Olmos or Rosanna Arquette or Madeline Stowe. I mean, these people are used to being on camera and being entertaining. So it's a huge asset in trying to make something that is more than just educational.
Absolutely. And so it seems from what you're saying that there's two aspects, perhaps, that there's the inspirational part of kind of getting some sense of hope going forward as a filmmaker. And then there's also the technical aspects, you know, sharing your expertise.
Exactly. You know, you think, okay, the first episode begins with me talking about my first experience after film school. And the things I hadn't learned. And so what I wanted to do was demystify the job of director and make people aware that there's way more to it than the technical side.
Right, yes, yeah. And how is A Director Prepares going to be available to people who are interested?
We're, you know, this, for better or for worse, there isn't anything like this out there. And so we're kind of, as I've done many times, we're kind of inventing the wheel for ourselves in that we want it to get to colleges. We want it to get some kind of public television life. We want it to go foreign. And I just got back from Athens, Greece, where the American embassy in Athens brought me there. And because of some wonderful people that believed in the project, we had a screening with over 300 people watching it as a movie. And we only showed three episodes and they didn't budge. They loved it. So,
great.
So we're not 100% sure. We're going to try to make it available on the website ourselves. And we're also at the same time trying to see how to get it on television in some fashion.
Yeah, I know at the website there is the opportunity to sign up for more information about when it might be available and how to get it. So I just want to let people know again, the website is bobbyroth.net. There's often a balance in the arts between making the art you want and making money. And many times these two things do not occur at the same time. So I'm wondering how you've approached making art and making a living in your career.
I think that, you know, you look at this because you think, okay, now maybe my children do this. And your first instinct is, no, don't be an actor. Don't be a filmmaker. It's a very rough life. You'll never make a living. You'll always be insecure. But then you realize that, well, it's very hard to make a living as a filmmaker. It's incredibly rewarding to get to spend your days working with a bunch of people to create something you all believe in. Mm. And so, you know, I think it's mostly hard work.
Right.
And when people say, what's the most important asset for a director? It's the ability to work hard and to stay with it. And, you know, I know the odds are not with you because 1 in 15 people that I went to film school with made a living at all in the film business.
Mm.
But for that 1 in 15, that's the right one, evidently. And it's usually some kind of tenacity that results, you know, it seems like it's always a fluke.
Yeah.
That there isn't a real path that you can say, well, you know, first become an assistant director or, I mean, I wouldn't know. I don't try to answer that question.
No.
I do think that it's all tied to the material and the story you want to tell.
Yes.
So the first thing you have to do is get your hands on material. Either you have to write it yourself or you have to partner. I have a great friend who's a wonderful director, and he, when he was in school, partnered with a great writer, and together they made several, you know, good independent movies that launched both their careers. I think everything comes down to the story.
Yes, yeah. And with the sort of change in TV where now, you know, a lot of series have the scope and budget almost of some feature films, I imagine there's perhaps more opportunity for making, you know, film almost through TV as well.
It's really hard to know. I mean, look, I'm a big fan of Game of Thrones and a big fan of Mad Men. I was a big fan of all these new Showtime shows like, you know, Masters of Sex or Ray Donovan or The Affair. Their production values are very high. It's become more the equipment itself, the cameras, the lights, the sound equipment has become more accessible. But it's still very tough to find the right distribution outlet for a young filmmaker or even an older filmmaker who may want to tell a more eclectic story.
Yes.
And, I just think that ultimately you have to believe that quality will prevail and that if you have something to say and you learn how to use the tools to say it well, there'll be a place for you.
Yes. Yeah. So do you take into consideration the projects that you take on that you, you know, believe in them artistically?
Sure. But that said, you know, I also have a daughter in private school, so I'd be lying if I said that a lot of the projects I directed in episodic TV over the years were for artistic reasons alone. I mean,
yes.
I found myself doing things like 90210 or Dr. Quinn or The Division, which didn't really speak to me creatively, but I always found I was able to find something in them felt more personal, and I learned from every one of them.
Yes.
And as an example, I did a mini-series on Naomi and Winona Judd, two Christian country music singers who couldn't have been further from my own personal, both my interest and my history.
Uh-huh.
And I had such a good time making that miniseries and learned so much and became friends with the judge that, you know, it's like going to graduate school. It's like getting paid to learn about something you would never probably find on your own.
Yes.
And I'm still friends with Naomi.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And those are people I would never have met. So I think that, well, I try to do as good a work as I can creatively. I don't always take the show because I think, oh, you know, I love what that show is.
Yes.
You know, I love the challenge. I mean, just the shows I did
in the last year are pretty different from one another.
Yeah,
you know, Scorpion is very different than Hawaii 5-0. It's very different than Player.
Yeah.
And yet, they're all on network television, and I learn from all of them.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me a little bit, there's a Buddhist tenet that says, you know, you can find enlightenment even through scrubbing floors if you have the right approach to doing that. And that sounds similar to me. What you're saying is that, you know, it doesn't matter really what you're doing. If you bring the highest quality of work to that, it can still be a very creative experience, and you can learn a lot from it as well.
That's very well put, and that's basically my approach, is that you can always do your best work. You can always show up and try to listen. You can always try to tell the story the best way. You can always try to be as inventive as possible with the camera. You can always find a new approach to talking to the actors and getting the most out of the actors. And people ask me sometimes, what is it like going to a new show and being the leader of a group of people who've been working together for years? And it's a wonderful challenge, because I went to Hawaii 5-0. I didn't know Scott Kahn or Alex O'Loughlin, and they just were very open. I mean, people want you to succeed.
Mm.
You just have to show them that you've done everything you can to learn how to best tell their stories. And when I worked hard and showed up prepared and moved quickly and really listened to the performers, they were great to me. Every actor I've worked with in the last year has been so wonderfully responsive, and yet they're all different from one another.
Right, yeah.
And I just think that over the years I've learned more and more how to talk to them and how to connect with them, and that's the real fun and the real challenge of it.
Yes, yeah. We've got about a minute left of the show, so I've just got to ask you really quickly. All art is about communication. Are there particular values or themes you like to communicate through your work?
I think kindness and tolerance are the main ones now.
Yes, yeah. Well, and perseverance and flexibility maybe as well.
Yeah, that's stuff you have to practice yourself.
Yes.
That's less about what you say and more about what you do, which is like being a good parent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your kid may not listen to you, but they're certainly watching what you do.
Yes. Yeah, that is very true. Well, thank you so much, Bobby, for taking the time to talk to us. It's been great talking to you.
Oh, thank you, Ruth. This is great.
Thank you. Well, just to let you know again, Bobby's website is bobbyroth.net, BOBBYROTH. If you're interested in finding out more about the masterclass project a director prepares, which is a fascinating documentary. I've been lucky to see the first episode of that. It's very interesting about the mechanics of film, as well as a valuable teaching tool. So again, if you want to check that out, it's bobbyroth.net. And then also, just to remind you about my website, it's aquestionofbalance.com. If you go there, you can connect with me on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. You can email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com, if you've got ideas for guests or topics. I'd love to hear from you. I hope you have a good week, and I will see you next week.